Good morning. You're listening to TV on the Radio here on BFF.fm. I'm Jessica, and I'm here with Leah. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's our last show of the year.
It is.
R.I.P. and peace 2018.
Ugh. R.I.P. and pieces. As they say.
So today we're doing our top everything of the year. Unfortunately.
And that's our show.
Yeah. Unfortunately, everyone's not a winner, as it turns out. There can only be 5 to 6 shows in our top five. today we're going to run them down. So I guess without further ado, we don't need any more introduction than that. I don't know why I feel the need to talk.
We don't.
Should we just get into it,
Leah? Yeah, go for it.
Do you want to go first?
You go first. You go first.
Okay. Our guest today is the studio and me pushing this chair around and banging into stuff. Fifth show. How am I supposed to say that? My number 5 show of the year.
Yes.
Killing Eve.
Oh, okay.
Every time we do this show, I look at your facial expression to try to see if, like, you totally disagree or if we're going to match on something. Killing Eve, I loved it so much.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this show is what happens when you stop treating things that women like as, like, girly shit that's mm-hmm. not worthy of being in a serious drama. Mm-hmm. And it was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It was like, Sandra Oh was great. Jodie Comer was fucking menacing. I love that they dared to make a woman a psychopath
mm-hmm.
and a psychopath, like, sympathetic and fucking fabulous.
Yes. The assassin fashion in that show was just outstanding.
It was a great ride. So
I would like my entire life to have, like, giant screen caps for everything too.
Good use of
Muni
title cards. Yeah.
Yeah.
Muni.
Yeah. It was great. Yeah. It was great. I also loved Killing Eve. It did not make my list.
Really?
It did not make my list.
Okay. All right. I'll keep it brief. You go ahead. What's your fifth show?
My fifth show was Succession on HBO.
Ooh.
The rich asshole show I didn't know that I needed in my life. I absolutely didn't know that I must have a fleet of black helicopters. before I die. That is my goal.
Hashtag goals.
To take off over Manhattan and ferry me to somewhere fabulous while I plot Machiavellian takeovers that fuck over everyone in my life. But, you know, we all still end up talking to each other because we're so mega rich that there's nobody else for us to talk to. I thought it was brilliantly acted. I was super compelled. Like, they made this guy running through the streets of New York to get to a board meeting, like, super, super compelling.
Yeah.
The people were all terrible, which I didn't think would be my bag in 2018. And yet they were such sort of caricatures of terrible people that are not even caricatures. It seemed very real to me. But I don't know. It just really, it pleased me in some inner asshole part of my life that I didn't know I needed. And I enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. You're right. The acting was amazing. I was just shocked at how much I bought into everyone's journey because they were all monsters.
They really were all terrible people. And it shows not a sympathetic side to being, like, that rich and powerful where everything is a calculated move, but it shows that, like, you really get to a point where you take no enjoyment in it.
Right.
And I thought that was kind of a fascinating look at it. I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it. I was super excited to watch it every week.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
My number 4 show of the year was season 2 of Glow.
Okay.
And
okay.
I think Glow was in my top 5 last year, which in retrospect, I mean, I don't know if I'd take that back, but, like, season 2 is leaps and bounds above season 1, which is not to disparage season 1 because it was great.
Yeah.
But the season was one of the, like, funniest and most, like, heartfelt and gutting seasons of television while also being, like, one of the most creative things I've ever seen. Like, Master of None did, they took some bottle episodes and really went wild and did something you know, kind of interesting and different. It was just such a joy to watch. And like all the characters were wonderful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because of the setting, like just so aesthetically pleasing and wild to look at.
Yeah. It's a super female centric show that keeps the focus on the females.
Yeah.
While having Marc Maron, who is kind of a scene stealer a little bit and definitely brought his BDE to this in a very respectful way. I was planning on, I was trying to cheat, and I was just going to have like a bunch of, my number four was going to be season two of the following three shows, and GLOW was one of them, because season two of GLOW was really outstanding. It was tough for me to not include it as my number four with my S2. That's a great pick. I loved it. I really enjoyed it. Alison Brie was amazing. Debbie Gilpin, or whatever her name is, also outstanding. The whole cast was great. It's really, truly, it's a show that's about women, and it did keep the focus on women in a way that was super gratifying. And Don't Kidnap is a banger, and that has been stuck in my head for months.
Me too.
Months.
And now it's going to be back.
Yeah. that's a great pick. My number four pick was also a female-heavy show. My number four pick is Smilf, which is one of the shows.
I thought you might pick that show.
That I am most excited to see the second season. I really, really love this show. We watched this. It aired on Showtime in January, and it has pretty much stayed with me throughout the year. Written by and starring Frankie Shaw, who I was unfamiliar with, as like a struggling single mother, and it just does so much. Rosie O'Donnell was outstanding in that role as her mother. I love saying and hearing "a box of donkeys." That's my next tattoo, "a box of donkeys." And I thought also that show did some interesting things in ways that hadn't been shown before. Mm-hmm. There's an episode where she agrees to meet this guy. He pays her to meet him like at a Walmart type store, and he's going to give her money just for that. And that episode took me on a real journey. It was like deep in the Me Too moment at that time, and everything was still really fresh. And that episode had her, like, it just did this whole arc where she essentially experienced, like, feeling hopeful about something and having a man, like, enable her with something and then instantly take it away. And I cried throughout, like, that whole episode. I thought it was really beautiful. And I thought a lot of the episodes, it deals with issues that aren't always in the forefront. And it also does something which is, it set her up for being in this, like, she's living in this precarious, terrible situation, and it fully acknowledges her role in keeping herself in that while also acknowledging, like, the bigger forces at work. And I'm super excited for season two. I thought it was really interesting, really different. Rosie O'Donnell was outstanding, and I loved it.
Yeah, that show was a very narrow miss for my top five, and I did love how it sort of opened up the deeper issues slowly over the course of the season, while still being totally enjoyable episode to episode. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the trailer for season
two? Yes, I have.
I'm really excited.
Yeah, I'm super excited.
It looks like it's, you know, maybe taking some more resources and, like, really using them to do something creative based on the trailer. I'm not sure what it'll actually look like, but it looks like it's going to be really good. I think that's a good pick. What are we on? Number three?
Number three. Top three.
My number three was Succession.
Okay.
I keep raving about. I loved it so much. I feel like you summed it up really well, but I expected it. So it's produced by Will Ferrell and Adam McKay. Mm-hmm. And going in, I kind of expected it to be a more partisan indictment of, like, a Fox News type corporation. Mm-hmm. But I was surprised at how it presented, like, the people and the corporation, like, without judgment, just sort of presented them for who they were. And what ended up being interesting to me was, like, my sympathy for these characters who are kind of monsters, like, not a ton of redeeming qualities in anyone. We talked about who the hero of the show was, and I don't think there is a hero. You really buy into the stakes for some reason. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was super interesting. Kieran Culkin.
Outstanding.
Greatest actor of our generation. like the father-son dynamics with the older son and the sibling dynamics. And yeah, so everything about that show I just loved.
Yeah, I also thought it's exactly right that that world is sort of presented without judgment. And so are like the very, very glaring, deep psychological scars that all of these people have. Like it's so just... It's not, I was going to say like telegraphed, but it's explicitly stated, like they all just want love. And it's like this, but again, sort of presented without judgment, like it's got a kind of removed look at all of that that just unfolds it as the season progressed. And yeah, I was super into it. I thought it was great. And yeah, all the acting across the board was great. Kieran Culkin was amazing in that show. Yeah.
All right.
And who's the guy who plays the dad again?
Brian Cox.
Brian Cox. I read an interesting profile, actually, of Kieran Culkin. And Brian Cox said that he was just kind of blown away by Kieran Culkin because he has that very, like, unselfconscious, like, not stylized style of acting that Brian Cox sort of arrogantly said is less common in American actors and more common in British actors, which is something I say every time I talk about a British show. I'm like, it's just so naturalistic. But then when he said that, I was like, what a dick. But yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah,
I love it.
Everyone just really fucking brought it in that show. So well done.
So Succession's your number three. Yeah. Okay. My number three pick, Barry, starring Bill Hader. I still don't know what to think about that show other than Henry Winkler is a delight. Henry Winkler is like something that I didn't know I needed in my life in 2018. And then he showed up and I was like, I absolutely needed everything I've learned about Henry Winkler. And I went down a deep Henry Winkler hole after watching Barry. Everything I've learned about him since makes him seem like one of the most delightful, joy-filled people on the planet. Yeah. And that is definitely necessary in 2018. He's awesome in this show that manages to be everything. Like, Bill Hader is super creepy, simultaneously attractive. He's a murderer. He's funny. Mm-hmm. He's like
psychologically wounded.
There's just everything in this show. It was heartbreakingly sad the way it ended. Really, I actually think about that not infrequently, the way it ended, and wonder how next season will build on that. And it also had like that thing where all of the tertiary characters were filled out in very, very pleasing ways. Yeah. NoHo Hank, delightful. He is a delight. I look forward to anything he does. Yeah, so many of these stories just kind of seem to like unfold in ways that were unexpected to me and ways that seemed really truthful. And I thought that was delightful. I really also look forward to the second season of Barry and can't wait to see where it goes. And really, you should all do yourselves a favor and read the GQ profile of Henry Winkler.
Yeah, cosign.
Where it says Henry Winkler is just happy to be here because, it's really something and it's super touching. The stories that Bill Hader told while talking about Barry where like Henry Winkler would watch the show with his wife every week and then call him up and be like, that was really something. And Bill Hader is like, you were there, you read it, you knew what was happening. And Henry Winkler just seems like an absolute delight and a little joy-filled man, which is what we need in 2018. I thought this was also a different type of show than I thought it was going to be. Immediately when I saw the preview was like, oh, it's Gross Point Blank Light, the best John Cusack movie ever, fuck that. And I loved it.
Yeah.
And it's not Gross Point Blank Light, it's different.
Same. I love that show. And Henry Winkler really leverages that energy that you can tell is his natural energy, but into a character that is like both happy-go-lucky and also flawed and like kind of a guy who doesn't really recognize he's a failure in the way that other people see him as. And it's really, like, it's fraught and also, like, heartwarming and wonderful.
Yeah, there's crushing sadness and ennui. Yeah. There's pathos. There's drama. There's comedy. There's all of it. No, no eyebrows. Yeah. No ho-hank. All of it. It's great.
So good. Okay, my number two show, and I realized this, like, 5 minutes before we started recording this, that technically this show came out at the very end of 2017, but I'm going to count it.
We'll allow it.
18. Okay. Came out in on Netflix. Peaky Blinders.
Okay.
Season four. That was.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've talked about Peaky Blinders ad nauseum, but I feel like it just keeps getting better.
Yeah.
I felt like season four, I don't know. It was like an, I was going to say it's like an opera, but I don't even like opera. There's something about it that was just like, it flowed together so well. I felt like, I just felt the emotion viscerally.
Yeah.
The storytelling is so tight. Like, there are very few shows where I feel, you know, especially in this day and age, we talked about Roma recently and how I wish I had seen that in the theater because I want that kind of thing to be more of an immersive experience and for me to be less in that headspace of like, sitting next to my phone and looking at my computer now and then. And I felt Peaky Blinders does that for me. I feel totally
engrossed,
enwrapped when I'm watching that show. And I just love the season, like the communist storyline and his affair with the union leader, whose name I can't remember. It's just like you don't really know what's happening. You don't know what's going on in any one character's head, but you can feel like the tension between them.
Yeah.
Family shit. Aunt Paul, like facing death and just turning into a bitch not to be fucked with anymore.
Yeah.
I just love this season.
The women sort of coming to the forefront in this season too. It was awesome. I did really love season four of Peaky Blinders. I did not include it on my list, but it was a very narrow miss for me.
Yeah.
It's on my, it's definitely on my best of. And Cillian Murphy is just truly outstanding and menacing and vulnerable and all kinds of things in that role. And
it's very, very real that like a guy who's a criminal leader who becomes successful basically like turns into a libertarian. Like, I got mine. I don't know why you can't get your shit together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very anti-union and like, yeah.
Yeah. It was great. It was great. And that triumphant finale, the big reveal, was was awesome.
You didn't love Adrian Brody's role this season, but I fucking loved it. I love him chomping the scenery.
I mean,
it worked for me.
It was
it was over the top.
It was something. It was really something. It was over the top, which I guess was fitting. I mean, the Cillian Murphy changed the way he walked in this season.
Yeah.
Like, he was just like taking up more space physically and I also am super excited about season five of Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, me too.
I definitely look forward to that. My number two, which I've been back and forth a lot on this, but when I thought about leaving something off my list, I didn't want to leave this one off, is a show we just talked about last week, Wanderlust. And
oh, really?
I really, really loved that show. I thought Toni Collette was outstanding. I thought it did so much in a kind of compressed, like, it had six episodes that I really thought about a lot since I've watched it. And I thought Toni Collette's performance was just outstanding. And it was really enjoyable in that, like, I don't know, like, it asked a lot of really deep questions. And I don't know, it just hit me. It hit me right when I saw it.
Yeah.
I was actually speaking with a friend of ours, and she said, too, that she's a therapist and said that the portrayal of therapy in this show seemed to be the most realistic portrayal she had seen, other than Judd Hirsch in Ordinary People, so which is slightly different tonally. But, yeah, I thought Toni Collette was just really, really outstanding, and I loved it, and I feel like it's one of those shows that I could, like, revisit or think about more and different things would come up for me. And
that was a great show. I very much enjoyed it. The acting was spectacular. Toni Collette, just what she can do with her face. If someone described to me the kind of bottle episode that's just her and her therapist talking, I wouldn't believe that it could be as good as it was. Yeah. Like, it was so, it was real journey and really powerful to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I know we say this a lot, but it was also just a beautiful show.
It was.
It doesn't hurt when you throw in a spectacular wardrobe. Like, I don't mind.
Yeah. All the wardrobes were beautiful. Those, like, rich colors and vibrant. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
All right, well, we're moving right along. Should we go to a song before we reveal our number one? Okay, we're going to do a quick song. And yeah, stay tuned, y'all. We're going to reveal our number one shows of the year. If you look closer, you'll recognize I'm not that special, I'm broken time. Crashing slowly, the bugs are in me. Welcome back to TV on the Radio, our last show of the year. And are you ready, Leah?
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Should I go first?
Yeah.
Okay. My number one pick of the year was Barry.
Yay!
Which we already discussed. But yeah, I just thought that Bill Hader was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm always surprised when an SNL alum makes me really feel things. Mm-hmm. But he conveyed the tragedy of his life in such a great way. Yeah. I fucking love the concept of a hitman who his larger problem with his job is that he was just sort of bored and unsatisfied.
Yeah.
And him sort of sublimating his problems with his life, his suppression of his guilt about what mm-hmm. he does, instead of facing it, trying to become an actor and trying to become a different kind of fake. And I loved all the people that surrounded him mm-hmm. and the sort of wacky is the wrong word, but the sort of comedy of errors almost that comes from him being an active paid killer and also trying to take acting classes at the same time and people getting involved. And they just did every secondary character was great. I can't say enough about NoHo Hank.
Yes.
It's such a good show. And the twists and turns, and it was super intense. And Henry Winkler, fucking angel come down from heaven.
Yeah.
I loved it.
It was really funny. It had.
Yeah, it was super funny.
Crushing sadness mm-hmm. at its heart. It was very kind of vulnerable. And there were just so many. I'm going to sound like a total asshole saying this, but just layers to the show. The fact that the best actress in the class is truly the monster is this self-involved almost sociopath also.
He's sort of trying to escape the depravity of what he does mm-hmm. every day, and then you find out that depravity is all around us. She's sort of a heartless monster and doesn't it's so
and
well done.
Totally opportunistic and just but it's really, really great. super good, and I definitely look forward to the next season.
Yeah, me
too. That's a good pick. It's a good pick.
Okay. All right. What's yours?
All right. So I think
drum roll noise.
Yeah, I think you're gonna be, I don't know, disappointed, shocked.
I would never, Leah.
Upset. So, just if I can preface this by saying, like, 2018.
Oh, I we've fucking all got to acknowledge it
that it's not been great, right? It hasn't been great. And nope.
There have been ups and downs, but yeah, a lot of downs.
There have been a lot of downs. And so, yeah, I feel like the things that have spoken to me this year have been shows where women are in power, mm-hmm. and they're like, fuck that. Like, and things have shifted.
Yeah.
Ozark season 2 was included in my season 2, which was going to be my third choice. Season 2 of the following 3 shows. Ozark season 2, I loved how that turned and Laura Linney was like head bitch in charge, yeah. like straight up like, oh, you think this is about Jason Bateman? Like, no. Mm-hmm. And so shows like that I've really loved. I've super gotten into. Peaky Blinders was another great version of that where it starts with these women in like vulnerable positions and then it kind of turns to where like they're central in, yeah. in flipping the script. And then shows like Barry where it's like there's something deeper at the heart of it that's kind of like universal and like a bigger kind of existential question. Uh-huh. So the show that resonated the most with me this year, totally surprisingly for me, was The Zen Diaries of Carrie Shandling.
Really?
Yes. I thought about this a lot. And
I'm actually shocked.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Queer Eye.
Queer Eye is my number 6. Queer Eye, like, with a bullet. But, yeah, I was very, very fraught with leaving Queer Eye off. But, no, The Zen Diaries of Carrie Shandling. I thought so much of that spoke to me in the way that it was, like, this portrayal of this very flawed, difficult person. Mm-hmm. But it was done with such genuine love and affection. Yeah. And, like, all the people who were involved in that. It was Judd Apatow produced it, I guess, and directed and sort of spearheaded the whole thing. But everybody who's involved, like, you could just see this tangible, like, love that they had for Gary Shandling. And I, prior to that show, didn't know anything about him, really.
Yeah,
me
either.
I just found his voice annoying. That was all I knew. And it was just this really loving eulogy of this person that was complicated, but at heart was, like, really searching for this, like, very vulnerable, like, truth.
Yeah.
And that, like, being curious and being open to finding something else, especially when it seemed like he was kind of this, like, cynical, prickly type person, like, who really genuinely wanted to attain that, like, was just very moving to me. And I found myself really blown away by, like, that whole, the whole thing. It was, there were problems. We talked about it during our show. I feel like Gary Shandling was probably a, like, pretty misogynistic asshole. And
yeah.
They touched on that. But, yeah, I just, like, would that we all could be remembered so fondly, even though we're all problematic, flawed people who get yeah. in our own way.
Well, that's a lot interesting. Of the time. I think, like, I mean, there's no justice in this world, but it is like Gary Shandling seems like he could be a huge dick and maybe was misogynistic, but like really was so, like the idea of interrogating yourself that mm-hmm. constantly and for that long, even after you have achieved success,
yeah.
like I feel like that is incredible. And to keep questioning whether you are, you know, speaking the truth.
Yeah.
I suppose, like, you know, hopefully if we work that hard to make sure we're trying to be our best selves, like, mm-hmm. we'll be remembered for it in some way.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was incredible because I do it's most people, you don't even have to be famous or successful. Mm-hmm. Most people don't like do that much self-reflection.
Yeah.
And that was really inspiring to learn that about him.
Yeah. And I think the thing that was really just truthful about it is they were like, oh, he was still a dick.
Right.
Like it just was a very complete portrayal of this person that they all so kindly remembered the good parts. And I guess that's true yeah. for everybody when they die, but it was a very, very lovingly, like, And he's also widely acknowledged as somebody who did help a lot of comedians and was kind of at the forefront of this whole, like, he's for good or for ill kind of responsible for Seinfeld and, you know, that like shift in comedy. Like the Gary Shandling show was extraordinarily meta at a time when that was just completely different. And I thought it was just really touching, and I think it's really inspiring to have somebody try to strive for that. And especially, as I said, what spoke to me is like being a naturally kind of cynical asshole. Like, he was someone who was glib and smug and all of these things, and yet constantly searched for more, or like tried to find a deeper meaning or like a connection.
Right.
And it showed him being like vulnerable. And
that's what so much of comedy is about, right?
Yeah.
Is finding that something that's true and being vulnerable enough to like speak something true, whether it gets you a laugh or gets you like a really funny look, you know? And that's terrifying.
Yeah.
And the idea that he did that, like he challenged himself every day to try to find some deeper truth, or to find out what's funny about what makes something funny.
This is a man who worked for 4 years to refine the script on Over the Hedge, which I'm sure everybody who was associated with Over the Hedge fucking hated him for. But that's just who he was.
Right.
And just like to make that sort of be your life's thing, to try to like, really like do some deep self-reflection and figure out who you are at heart and like what it means to be you and what your contribution is going to be, is really worthwhile.
Yeah.
And I just found it incredibly moving, and I went into it thinking like, oh, like this guy's super annoying. And that was reinforced for pretty much half of the documentary. But it was one of those things that I feel like gave me a very deep understanding of who Gary Shandling was, and a real like sad, you know, I felt his loss. It's also worth it for the eulogy that Kevin Nealon gives. He has never been funnier than in that eulogy, where he starts off by saying like, we all knew he was going to be trouble when he spelled Gary with two R's. Like, what the fuck is with that? And, it was just a very loving portrait of somebody accepting them for who they were. And that's rare. I mean,
All right. Solid pick.
Okay.
I was very moved by that.
Yeah.
All right. So there you have it, folks. Some solid,
if you haven't seen any of the shows that we've recommended, what are you waiting for?
Yeah.
I mean, this is the ringing endorsement you need.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that we both had some trouble narrowing it down to five. You have admitted that you were going to cheat, but
I was going to cheat in many, many
ways. You did some soul searching.
I was going to do a top six, because I really did feel like it wouldn't be representative of my year if I left Queer Eye out.
Yeah. Okay, so give me some of your runners up on those mentions.
So I mentioned Ozark season 2.
Yeah.
Big Mouth season 2.
I have that on my list
was
too.
Definitely something that I enjoyed so much this year, and I was on the fence about, wrongly on the fence about season 1 of Big Mouth, but I felt like, again, it had like a real searing vulnerability that touched me, and it was hilarious. And I loved everything about season 2. I loved season 2 of Ozark. Ozark, Big Mouth, and then season 2 of GLOW were the three that I was going to combine into season 2s. And then Queer Eye, I really, really struggled with leaving Queer Eye off, because Queer Eye was the bomb that my soul needed this year. It is just a joy.
It's truly what we needed in 2018.
It is, absolutely. It's like this expression of masculinity that has not been seen on TV, and this like just takedown of toxic masculinity in a very non-threatening, like safe, non-judgmental way. And everybody needs to watch and absorb that show. And if you can make it through one fucking episode without crying, you're a better person than I am. One of the great joys of this year has been following each of those guys on their like journey since the show to get into Bachelor parlance. And following all five of them on Instagram is one of the most worthwhile things you can do. Karamo's a little bit preachy, but it's worth it for all of the other four chiming in on everybody's pictures and saying, like, "Work, you look amazing." And, like, they're just so supportive and loving of each other. And, yeah, that's also what the world needs in 2018 and beyond.
I had trouble leaving Queer Eye off my list for that very reason, just the sheer joy it brought to me and so many other people, and how it was a breath of fresh air. And we already said it all. I think it's what we needed. And if you haven't watched Queer Eye, let that joy and light into your life. I also, Big Mouth season 2 was a narrow miss for my list. Atlanta, which I thought this second season was incredible, and that was really hard to leave off my top five. The final season of Casual, I really enjoyed. I'm going to miss that show. Both of us love that show. I love how the final season, like, was set slightly in the future, which was really interesting and kind of daring, and the way they did it was really well done, I thought.
Yeah, it hit so many, like, personal best notes for me with the episode about the last Super Bowl. I was like, oh, they really, like, Casual is the show that is targeted directly at me. Yeah. Like, it's got men in chunky sweaters, beautiful Lehman houses. All the time. it's beautiful.
Maybe he's been listening.
I will miss that show. I doubt he has been listening. But Xander, if you have been listening, you're a delight and you're welcome on the show.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what he does next.
Yes.
End of the Fucking World. Yes. Like, I really enjoyed that show. That came out in January, so it's been a while. But that was a really good watch. Wanderlust, very narrowly missed my list. And I really need to give a shout out to Schitt's Creek, which is just the most enjoyable Canadian show.
I have a similar, The Good Place, which I have not started season 3, which did come out in 2018. But The Good Place is also one of those shows that I felt I really needed this year. It's Michael Shore also doing that rigorous self-reflection and trying to, like, examine what it means to be good. And truly, the concept of that show is what we owe to each other. And in 2018, our government certainly isn't asking that. So it's nice to have somebody doing it. And
we
it manages
network television.
Yeah, and it manages to be hilarious.
Yeah.
My husband and I, to this day, I will say buzzer beater special to my husband, and he can envision, like, Kristen Bell running out of the supermarket with, like, a grocery platter full of shrimp. And, like, it's just really funny. So much of that show is hilarious. And it's teaching you things, guys. It's nice. It's really nice. That was close for me. Going back to the end of the world, of the fucking world, that was a really close miss for me also. Again, another show doing something different.
Yeah.
Like, it was wildly different than anything else that came out this year, and just really interesting. I had Mindhunter on my list as something that I enjoyed during the year. That was 2018.
Was it?
Yeah, I believe so.
No, I think that was 2017.
No, I don't think it was 2018.
All right. No way to find out.
Yeah. But
all right, that would have definitely made my consideration if it were 2018, but it's not. So
I have to say, I was gratified looking back at the year. I think you and I have both talked about this on different shows, how I feel like this year has just been such a continuous barrage of not great stuff, verging on really fucking terrible shit, that it has just been like, I've really felt like there hasn't even been anything that I've enjoyed. And it was gratifying to look back and see, like, oh, it was actually tough for me to narrow things down. There were multiple things that held my attention and that I enjoyed and that made me think about things in a different way.
It's hard to remember a time when I watched anything but Hallmark Christmas movies.
Sure.
Apparently there was. We have evidence recorded.
Yeah.
So we didn't necessarily break our picks down into categories, but I just made some up anyway. Best documentary? Do you have any favorites?
For me, I would say, if I'm not counting Gary Shandling, I would say The Staircase was...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, The Staircase was... it's not new, but it was released on Netflix this year with some addended episodes. Addended?
Addended, is that right? Sure.
Some whatever. But it introduced me to David Rudolph, for which I will always be glad. And
the best lawyer vampire in the land.
And it really, really, I mean, if if we don't revise the carceral system in this country, or at least think about ways to revise it, yeah, we're on a bad path, guys.
Oh, yeah.
We're on a real bad path.
I mean, we're already in the bad place.
Yeah, we're definitely in the bad place.
But yeah, but that was a good one. Wild Wild Country was
amazing. Yes, that was super enjoyable.
If you haven't watched that, about Rajneeshpuram, what happens when some cult members come to small town Oregon.
Yep.
That's a wild, wild ride.
Yeah. Detectorist season 3 came out at the end of 2017. Mm-hmm. But that also, that was my top pick for last year. It was the most soothing show ever aired. And season 3 did not disappoint. I loved it.
We always talk about how soothing and what a balm that show is. Mm-hmm. And it's true, mm-hmm. but I feel like that undersells it. Like, if you, it's not like a screensaver or a lava lamp. It is like such a good, like, heartwarming show, and the characters are so delightful.
Yes.
Like, you should definitely watch that show. Do you have any guilty pleasures of the year?
I really don't.
Oh, really?
I don't feel like
look at you.
Got sucked into too much trash. I took up books again this year, guys. I've been reading quite a bit. So I feel like I haven't. Yeah, I didn't watch any of The Bachelors. I'm proud to say. I got out and I stayed out.
That's good.
Well, I don't know.
You can go back to that sissy school of yours while I'm watching Floribama Shore and The Bachelor.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there's probably something terrible that we've been watching. I also would like to just take a minute to say that I know it is universally beloved, but now it has become the hill I will die on. I'm never gonna watch a single fucking minute of The Great British Bake Off. Never.
All right, we shouldn't like alienate the entire world.
Yeah.
But after everyone raved about that show like it was the fucking second coming of, I don't even know. I've been watching it. It's a perfectly fine show to watch when you don't have the attention span for anything else. Is it the greatest show in the history of shows? No, it's not.
Is it even as good as Nailed It?
It's like, I'd say it's on par with Nailed It. It's much, you know, it's contestants for a whole season. Mm-hmm. Nailed It isn't, so I guess people get attached to the contestants, which I could see being more appealing, but whatever, it's fine. They're nice to each other and they're British, and I feel like that's another thing that people are drawn to in these turbulent times. Like, just shows where people are nice to each other.
Well, one of the things that was British that I greatly enjoyed that came out in January was Lovesick season 3.
Mm-hmm.
I've really enjoyed that entire show.
Yeah.
And I believe there's going to be another season.
No way, really?
Thanks to Netflix. So I'm super invested in seeing Daniel Ings be fucking dreamy. He was going to be in some CBS.
No, he isn't it.
Is it still on?
Yeah, it's getting a second season.
What's
procedural
it called?
Drama. Ugh, I forget.
It's got Alan Cumming in it.
Instinct, I think it's called.
Sure.
I haven't watched a minute of it.
I haven't either, but Daniel Ings deserves your time, guys.
I know.
I would
should
start
watch
with
it,
Lovesick.
But it's a CBS procedural drama. It literally can't be good, right?
Yeah, it really can't.
Yeah, maybe I'll try it. Okay. So we're going to get to what we're looking forward to very shortly. But I'm a little bit hesitant because whenever we talk about this, everything we mention ends up being a disappointment in some way. But so let's start with that. Was there, either the worst shows you saw or biggest disappointments of 2018?
Yeah, this show that I'm going to mention hits both categories. Season 2 of 13 Reasons Why. Insert that meme of Tyra yelling, "We were all rooting for you," because I absolutely fell hook, line, and sinker for the first season of
13
Reasons Why. I got weirdly obsessed with it. It reverted me back to being an actual teenager. And the second season just felt like disaster of the week. There was a lot of, I felt, gratuitous violence. It definitely made me clutch my pearls, but I was just thinking, like, there's got to be an acne subplot in here, right? There's, like, what other bad things can befall teens? There's got to be something about bad skin. It was just really, they tried way too hard. I don't know if it was rushed. I don't know what the deal was, but it did not succeed on almost any level, and I wish for better for Dylan Minnette, who was one of the breakout stars of the prior year for me. Yeah. I thought he was really touching in the first season. And
yeah, I don't feel like I have a lot to add that sums it up, but it was like, it was trash. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame because most of those young people are very strong actors.
Yes,
and
very talented.
They were doing their best. They really were. It's a season of television that didn't need to be made.
It did not. And we're getting a season three. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which we'll no doubt talk about.
Yes.
So this one wasn't a huge strikeout, so to speak. But I watched the first episode of the Cormorant Strike series, which I was so looking forward to. Although, too. I don't know why. All you are going to be is disappointed when someone adapts a novel with beloved characters. Like, it can't possibly live up to the novel. But yeah, it just fell kind of flat. So that was
very
a bummer.
Flat. That was a real bummer because I was living for that before the next book came out. And then I fell asleep during both episodes that I tried to watch, which, yeah, really tells you all you need to know.
I was vaguely looking forward to Mayans, the Sons of Anarchy spinoff. I wasn't expecting it to be good. I was not expecting it to be the absolute fucking shit show that the first season was. Yeah. Like, to the degree of not just being bad television, but, like, you can see Kurt Sutter's, like, deep insecurities, like, splattered all over the storyline. Mm-hmm. It was just really almost uncomfortable how pathetic the show was. I only watched one episode because, like, the extreme violence in just the first episode suggested that I would not, like, be able to actually stomach anything more.
In that same vein, Homeland was something that got a lot of advanced praise and buzz, and I was very much looking forward to it, thinking it would be like kind of a prestige thing, and that did not do anything for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't ultimately super disappointed because I wasn't heavily invested in it, but that was that in Roma, guys. I didn't get it.
All right. Any other disappointments? Anything else you want to talk about vis-a-vis 2018 before we touch on what we're looking forward to?
No, I mentioned this already, but I did think that, like, 2018, I was like, oh, nothing really brought me joy. Mm-hmm. Like, even TV, which had historically been something I would turn to for distraction, I was like, I haven't even been absorbed in anything. And it was really gratifying to look back and see that that wasn't the case, that there were things that were worthwhile.
Yeah.
Pop culture, keeping it real, guys.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did you have anything to add about 2018?
Oh, just like in a broader sense, what did I like? Big dick energy, that being introduced to my life.
Yep.
Seeing Bruno Mars.
Yes, always.
And that dog meme, the want to hear a secret dog.
You a bitch.
That's what, yep. That's that brought more joy to my life than a lot of other things in 2018.
The best meme ever.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's look forward to the next year, which can only be better, right, guys?
Sure.
Yeah. What are you looking forward to on the television?
Okay, so this is not coming out for a long time, but I'm already pre-hyped and getting my bologna sandwiches ready for the Firefest doc, which cannot come fast enough.
I didn't know that was happening until recently.
Oh, it's happening.
Boy, am I excited. That's going to be on Netflix.
Yes. There's dueling Firefest docs.
No.
One on Netflix and one that's going to be on Vice, I believe.
Oh, okay. The Netflix one is called Fire, the Greatest Party That Never Happened.
I'm so excited. God, I can't wait. I cannot wait.
Yeah.
It's going to be, I really will be super disappointed if it's not Blair Witch style. If somebody is not huddled over their dying phone saying they only have 20% battery left with snot running down their face. There's still time to get us on board, guys. We can help write this for you.
Yeah.
Chris Pine and Patty Jenkins have a show coming to TNT, a limited series. Mm-hmm. Or it's coming to AMC, maybe? I don't know. It's coming somewhere on January 29th. It's called I Am the Night. It's
I've heard of that.
It's based on the Black Dahlia case, but not, it's tangential. It's somebody else who got murdered and is tied to it somehow. Yes. Tied to it somehow. I don't know. But they have a good track history with Wonder Woman. Chris Pine is eminently watchable. Mm-hmm. So I will definitely give that a shot.
Okay.
Catastrophe Season 4 is airing in Britain in January. So I'm hoping it will be here like March or so.
It sounds all right. I feel like it usually comes around in March or April.
Yes. There's a show called Miracle Workers, which is also going to be a limited edition show coming to TBS, I believe, February 12th, starring Steve Buscemi as God. And he decides that he wants to blow up Earth and move on to his next project. He's over God. He's over. It stars Daniel Craig and Geraldine Visna. I cannot pronounce her second name, but she was in Cock Blockers, and she played John Cena's daughter.
Oh, she was great.
She's delightful. It stars
that
her.
It was just called Blockers, by the way.
Whatever. It was. There was a cock in front of it.
Yeah, yeah. No, anyway, I loved her in that movie.
She was great in that movie. But so she and Daniel Craig's. No, not Daniel Craig. Daniel Harry Potter kid.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm blanking. But yeah,
Daniel Craig is somebody different. But
yeah, that's James Bond, right?
Yeah, Daniel Radcliffe. Yes. Sorry. So that looks, from the previews, it looks interesting. And they are tasked with trying to save the Earth by making two people fall in love, which fool's errand. They work in the Department of Answered Prayers.
All right.
So I will definitely give that a shot because it's set in Heaven, Inc. And I like the idea of God as like a Elon Musk type who's just moving on to the next thing.
I am looking forward to Lindsay Lohan's Beach Club.
Oh, sure.
Did you hear that they're rebooting Temptation Island?
No, but that is a fool's errand.
I watched the original Temptation Island. Nothing will ever top. Like 2001. Yeah. I loved it. Mark Wahlberg, not the Mark Wahlberg, but the original host of Temptation Island, Mark Wahlberg, who's been hosting Antiques Roadshow since then, is coming back to host. You would think if he wants to keep his Antiques Roadshow job, they would be like, no. You get one or the other. You can't bring that shit to you.
The thing that was so amazing about Temptation Island is they literally made it up as they went along. They were just like, you can do that. Sure. It was really something. So, okay, I'm excited about that. I'm also excited about the FX Fosse.
Is that going to be a Ryan Murphy show?
It might be. It's the Fosse Verdeen thing starring Michelle Williams and Sam Rockwell.
Okay.
And I'm into that. And Paul Rudd, delightful, greatest actor of a generation, Paul Rudd, is starring in a show called Living With Yourself, which features Irish actress Aisling B. That's coming out mid-year next year, and it's about, again, the quest to try to be better. He goes to a psychiatrist to try to, like, be less of an asshole and then finds that he's been replaced in his real life. So there's, like, another version of him, and he has to figure out if he wants to be better or just let that version take over his life.
All right. Sounds great. There are so many things that we're going to be disappointed by in 2019.
I can't wait.
All right. Well, I think we're out of time. Thank you guys so much for listening this whole year.
Yeah.
We just love doing this and love that you guys have come on this journey with us. But here's to good TV in 2019 and better everything else.
Yes, better
God
everything
willing
else.
In 2019. Thanks, Leah.
Yeah,
this
thanks,
has been
Jess.
So fun.
It's been the best journey of my life.
Me
just
too.
I can't imagine being on this journey with anyone else. It's been great.
All right. Well, Happy New Year, you guys.
Yeah.
And we look forward to talking at you more in
2018. In 2019.
2019, yeah. all the years. All right. Stay safe.
Yeah. Keep it here on BFF.FM.
Yeah.
Forever.